Okay. The shiur this morning is dedicated by Naomi and David Sundell, marking the yard site of her father, Yaakov and Shmuel Aryeh, which the yard site is today. And the Shomash Rabban Ali and Shasimash Nachas Ruach from the Torah Mitzvahs and Maishim Tov, and that the entire family is involved in. I wanted to talk a little bit today about the Avelos practices of Sfiras HaOmer, the mourning practices which we know were followed, I think, universally throughout Klal Yisrael during the period of Sfiras HaOmer. As we know, the most famous explanation, the most basic explanation that's given for the practice of having Avelos during the time of Sfiras HaOmer, the concept of refraining from weddings and haircuts and all the other practices of Avelos, the most famous explanation is linked to a Gemara in Yavama, where the Gemara there describes that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, the students of Rabbi Akiva, 12,000 pairs, which if you do the math comes out to 24,000 people, 24,000 Talmidim passed away sometime during this general period of time between Pesach and Shavuos. Again, we know that sometime in this general time, right. So there are all different kinds of explanations as to when exactly during this period of time they passed away, which leads to the different minhagim that exist in Klal Yisrael about when exactly one is supposed to follow the Avelos. But the basic idea, again, we're not going to go into the differences between different customs, but the basic idea is agreed upon. There was this mass death of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva during this period of time, and you know that therefore that generated these practices of Avelos, which we're still following to this day. What I wanted to try to do today is to understand a little bit on a deeper level as to why the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva are so significant that we're still keeping practices of Avelos to this day to mark their demise. Again, it's... Right.
Right.
So again, clearly it's a tragic event. But one wonders a little bit if it doesn't seem to be blown out of proportion. I mean, again, just to put it in perspective. Right. So we'll talk about that. So just to put things in perspective a little bit, we know that during the summer months we have 3 weeks of mourning the Beis HaMikdash, and clearly the loss of the Beis HaMikdash had profound and continues to have profound implications for Klal Yisrael. The fact that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash anymore really changed the whole Judaism in many, many significant ways. And, so that's 21 days. And for the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, we actually mourn longer. We mourn for 33 days. Right? So, again, one has to pose the question, are the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva so significant that they overshadow the amount of mourning that we dedicate towards the loss of the Beis HaMikdash? The loss of the Beis HaMikdash, we give 21 days to mark that calamity in Jewish life. The loss of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, so we're even going beyond that, we're giving 33 days out of the year to mark their loss. Is it indeed the case that their loss is so significant that it seems to even get a longer period of Avelos than the loss of the Beis HaMikdash itself? To add to the question, there's a very interesting comment that Ramban makes in his commentary on the Chumash. The Ramban writes that the days of the Sfiras HaOmer are supposed to be incredibly happy days. In fact, the Ramban's... The Ramban writes, they are bookended between two very, very happy days on the Jewish calendar. The Yom Tov of Pesach, which was about Yetzias Mitzrayim and our freedom on the one hand, and Shavuos at the other end, which is all about our receiving the Torah and becoming a nation in the fullest sense of the term. In fact, the Ramban goes so far as to say the days of Sfiras HaOmer, in a sense, are kind of like Chol HaMoed. Right? Just like Chol HaMoed, brings together the intermediate days of a Yom Tov. It bridges the Yom Tov at the beginning and the Yom Tov at the end. And while Chol HaMoed is not quite on the same level as Yom Tov itself, but nonetheless, it certainly has a very festive character associated with it. The period of Sfiras Chomer, says the Rambam, is really the Chol HaMoed between Pesach and Shavuos. And as such, says the Rambam, these days of Chol HaMoed, of Sfiras Chomer, you would think would be characterized by tremendous, tremendous joy. Maybe they're characterized by endless Chol HaMoed trips, in which case I could understand maybe some of the avelos that goes into the period of Sfiras Chomer. Maybe that's the answer. But in all seriousness, if the Ramban says that these are days of tremendous joy because they're really days of Chol HaMoed, in a sense, it compounds the question that we had before. How could it be that these days, which on a fundamental level is supposed to be filled with so much joy and happiness because of the fact that they are the Chol HaMoed between Pesach and Shavuos, how can they be transformed into exactly the opposite into days of avelos, into days of mourning, because of the death of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? So what I want to try to do today is to understand what's so significant about the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva that they would leave their mark on the calendar for centuries and centuries, and hopefully we'll understand a little bit better, you know, some of the basic ideas behind the Sfiras HaOmer. The first thing that we have to try to understand is that there is, or we have to be aware of, is that there is a very fundamental difference of opinion in the medieval commentaries. Is the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer nowadays a mitzvah that comes from the Torah, or is it a mitzvah which is merely rabbinic? Is it Daraisa or Darabana? And on the surface, it seems like a strange question. Of course Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah that comes from the Torah. Of course it's Daraisa. It says the Pesukim. Usartem lachem imachras ha-shabos. Right? The Pesukim, I mean, it's about as explicit as you could possibly get. It says in the Pesukim twice, in Parshas Emor and in Parshas Re'eh, that you're supposed to count the days and the weeks between Pesach and Shavuos. So isn't that obvious that it's a mitzvah that comes from the Torah and not a later rabbinic enactment? But the truth is, the majority of Rishonim, the majority of medieval commentaries, take the position that Sfiras HaOmer nowadays is actually a Darabanan. It's actually a rabbinic mitzvah. Why? So they point to the language of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, "Usartem lachem imachras ha-shabbos." You should start counting Sfiras HaOmer on the day after Shabbos, which in this context means the first day of Pesach. Miyom haviyachem es omer ha-snufa. From the day on which you bring the Karbon HaOmer. The Karbon HaOmer was a sacrifice of barley that was offered up on the second day of Pesach, and it was that Karbon HaOmer which triggered the count of the 49 days of Shavuos. So the vast majority of Rishonim, of medieval commentaries, say, oh, the Pasuk says that you only count from the day on which you bring the Karbon HaOmer. Therefore, if, unfortunately, we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash, and we no longer have a Karbon HaOmer, it follows that the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is no longer a din d'oraisa, it's no longer a Torah commandment, and the fact that we count Sfiras HaOmer today is the rabbinic enactment to remind us of the way things used to be in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But we're no longer counting to fulfill the mitzvah min ha-Torah, the Torah mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. We're counting in order to fulfill a rabbinic mitzvah which was designed to remind us of the Beis HaMikdash. When you keep this idea in mind, again, this is the position of the vast majority of commentators, that the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer nowadays is the Rabbanan, it's not the Reis, it's the rabbinic enactment. This actually helps us understand several different issues that relate to how we count Sfiras HaOmer. So first of all, if you look at the Sidurim, so after people count Sfiras HaOmer, there's a long page of a lot of tefillos that many people say. So not everybody says all of those tefillos. Most of the yeshivas, here we happen to say them. Most yeshivas, I think, they they omit all of those tefillos following the Sfiras HaOmer. But there's one line which almost everybody says following Sfiras HaOmer. Harachamon hu yachazir lanu avodas v'samikdash l'mkomo b'meirav yomeinu. The Ribbono Shel Olam, we daven, you should restore the service of the Beit HaMikdash to us speedily in our days. Now, I think everybody would agree with that sentiment, and there's nobody saying, I don't think we should have the Beit HaMikdash. Everybody agrees that we wish HaKadosh Baruch Hu would restore the Beit HaMikdash to us, but why are we saying this line right now? I mean, okay, we just counted Sfiras HaOmer. So maybe when we bench lift, you know, Friday afternoon, we should also say, Harachamon, Hu Yachzir Lanu Avodas Beit HaMikdash L'Mekomo. What does that have to do with Sfiras HaOmer? The answer is, Sfiras HaOmer fundamentally is a mitzvah which is really dependent on the presence of the Beit HaMikdash. Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah that's generated by the bringing of the Karban HaOmer on the second day of Pesach. When we're counting Sfira nowadays, we're kind of really fulfilling the mitzvah on a less than ideal level. In other words, we're only fulfilling the mitzvah rabbinically because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash and a Karban HaOmer. So what we're really saying after we count Sfira is, Hashem, please restore the Beis HaMikdash so that next year when we fulfill this mitzvah, we'll be able to do it not just as a rabbinic mitzvah, we'll be able to do it, quote-unquote, for real. We'll be able to fulfill the Torah mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, not just the second-rate rabbinic version of doing Sfiras HaOmer. We want to fulfill the mitzvah in the best possible way. We want to fulfill the mitzvah with a restored Beit HaMikdash, with a Karban HaOmer, and with everything that goes together with that. Okay, so that's number one, just to understand that the role of that line, Harachamon, is really to remind us of the fact that Sfiras HaOmer is the Rabbanon nowadays. It's a rabbinic mitzvah, not a Torah mitzvah. Another interesting point with regard to Sfiras HaOmer being a rabbinic mitzvah. So what exactly is the language that one uses when one counts? So today's 22, right? So Hayom Shnayim Ve'Esr Yom, Shehem Shloshah Shavuos V'Yom Echad. Right, so it depends which sitter you're using. Some people say La Omer, some people say Va Omer, right? The truth is the minhag among certain Gedolim was to try to say both. I know the Soloveitchik Zatzal would count if such and such Va Omer, and then repeat the count La Omer. The Shtaiklagon Zatzal also used to do a similar thing. But some Gedolim used to count twice. And you wonder, like, what's the big deal? Va'omer, va'omer. Okay, you know, so like if you dive inside, you say Mehera a lot of times, you know, that Mr. Ashkenaz doesn't say, okay, va'omer, va'omer, well, why should it make such a difference? Certainly, why would there be any Gadol who would count twice? Mm-hmm. Okay, so... So one of the explanations that's given for the difference between La Omer and Ba Omer revolves around the issue just brought up a moment ago. What does the word Omer mean in this context? So the truth is, Omer is a measurement. I mean, Omer literally means a measurement. It's a certain measurement of barley that they brought as the karban, right? So when you say today is the 22nd day La Omer, what you're saying is, today is the 22nd day since the Omer was brought. La Omer means, you know, it's a certain day relative to the Omer. And the Omer in that context means the Karban. Right? So when you say La Omer, you're actually stressing the relationship between the mitzvah of counting and the Karban. It's 22 days La Omer since the Omer, Omer meaning Karban. When you say today is 22 days Ba Omer, what you're saying today is the 22nd day in the Omer. You're using the term Omer to describe a period on the Jewish calendar, which, by the way, is not how the term was originally used. Originally, the Omer referred to the Karban. But in our usage, when we use the term Omer, you know, you say, I can't take a haircut because it's during the Omer. You don't mean, I can't take a haircut because it's during the Karban. That's not what you meant to say. You mean to say that, you know, this is the period of time that we refer to. It's really Sfiras HaOmer. and we refer to it as Shur as Va Omer. So, okay, today's the 22nd day in that period of time known as the Omer. That language does not emphasize the relationship between the counting and the Karban. So which language one uses reflects the extent to which one is tying this whole process to the Karban. If you say La Omer, it emphasizes even more that the counting and the Karban are very much related to one another. Another issue that's raised by Rishonim, again, which we can appreciate a little bit more based on, you know, all of this discussion. Generally speaking, when there's a mitzvah that we only perform on an annual basis, when we perform that mitzvah for the first time, we make a bracha of Shehechiyam. Right, so consider as an example, Chanukah Lecht. Right? So you kindle the Chanukah Lecht for 8 nights. Most of the time you make 2 brachas over the Chanukah Lecht, but the first night, because it's a new mitzvah that we're doing for the first time this year, we make an additional bracha of Shehechiyanu before we kindle the candles. Why is there no bracha of Shehechiyanu on the first night of Sfiras HaOmer? In many ways, it would seem to be parallel to Ner Chanukah, right? This is a mitzvah that comes around once a year. It's a mitzvah that isn't done in one moment. In other words, there are many installments to Sfiras HaOmer. There's similarly, there are 8 installments to the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. But the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, the first time we sin lich, we recite a bracha of Shehechiyanu. Why is there no parallel bracha of Shehechiyanu the first time that we count Sfiras? What's that? But just to push back on that a little bit, Chanukah is also a mitzvah that's rabbinic, right? Right.
It's more reminder of what we miss
than
a reminder of what is.
Okay, so let's put those answers together, and you know we'll see. This is stated by one of the Rishonim. There was one of the great Rishonim who lived in Provence in the 1200s, Rav Zerachya Halevi. Zerachya is just one of those names that's not as popular nowadays, but I guess back in the day, in southern France in the 1200s, Zerachya was the more popular name, but Zerachya Levi. He wrote a commentary on the Rif, a Talmudic commentary that's referred to as the Sefer HaMa'or, the Book of Light, and he himself, of Zerachya Levi, is often referred to as the Baal HaMa'or, you know, the author of the commentary called Ma'or, on Shas and on halachic matters. They say that I think he was like 18 years old when he wrote this commentary. Yeah, that doesn't make anyone feel depressed, right? But you know, he wrote this really, you know, incredible commentary when he was like 18 years old or so. In any case, the Baal HaMa'or writes, he takes up this question: how is it that we don't say Shehechiyanu on the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer? And he says essentially the same answer that was said here a moment ago. Says the Baal HaMa'or, the whole institution of Sfiras HaOmer nowadays is rabbinic. Right? He takes that position. It's not a mitzvah d'oraisa because we lack the Beis HaMikdash, we lack the Karban HaOmer. It's merely a rabbinic mitzvah to remind us of the way things were when there was the Beit HaMikdash. And being that, says the Baal HaMa'or, as we count Sfira, we're reminded of the absence of our Beit HaMikdash, we feel a certain sadness. And says the Baal HaMa'or, the whole bracha of Shehechiyanu is a bracha that indicates joy and happiness. We're happy to be here at this time. How can we be happy to be here at this time, says the Baal HaMa'or, when the very act of counting itself reminds us of the tremendous loss we have in Jewish life, the absence of the Beit HaMikdash? That's the Baal HaMa'or writes, that it's for that reason that we can't say Shehechiyanu on the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. The implication, by the way, of the Baal HaMa'or is that, God willing, when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, and we count Sfira Midaraisa, right, so then we will say Shehechiyanu. you know, the first time that we count Sfira on the second night of Pesach. That's a halacha that's going to change. It's not really going to change, but it's going to change in response to the new circumstances when we have the Beis HaMikdash back, as is Hashem. So then we actually will say Shachi Yomu, the first time that we count Sfira to Omer, because then it's going to be a tremendous, tremendous holiday. What's very striking, again, of the Baal HaMor is to contrast the words of the Baal HaMor with the Ramban we quoted earlier. The Ramban we quoted earlier, by the way, the Ramban and the Baal HaMor were actually contemporaries. They lived at the same time and they corresponded with one another. The Ramban, we quoted earlier on Chumash, says that the time of Sfiras HaOmer, fundamentally speaking, is an incredibly joyous and happy time, because it's what connects Pesach to Shavuos. It's a Chol HaMoed, says the Ramban. It's a time of tremendous, tremendous joy and happiness. And here, in contrast, the Baal HaMor is writing that after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the period of Sfiras HaOmer is actually, fundamentally speaking, a sad period, because the very counting of Sfira reminds us acutely of the absence of the Beit HaMikdash. So it's a little bit funny. I mean, how do you put these two things together? On the one hand, the Ramban is saying it's a time of tremendous joy. On the other hand, the Baal HaMor is saying it's a time of, you know, exceptional sadness. Now, I understand the difference between those two opinions is the Ramban is talking about when the Beit HaMikdash is standing, and the Baal HaMor is talking about when the Beit HaMikdash is no longer standing. But still, how does the pendulum swing so drastically from Sfira being a time of tremendous joy, according to the Ramban, you know, when the Beit HaMikdash is here, to Sfira being a time of such intense mourning when the Beit HaMikdash is not here, you know, to the point where, according to the Baal HaMor, how could we bring ourselves to say Shehechiyonu when we count Sfira, because there's a fundamental sadness that we feel in the absence of the Beit HaMikdash? And presumably, you know, the answer is that it's the very joy that the Ramban speaks about that leads to the very sadness that the Baal HaMor is speaking about. In other words, it's not two distinct emotions, but they're two emotions that come from the same place. Here, the Ramban is describing that when the Beit HaMikdash stood, this was such an incredibly, incredibly joyous time of year. It was a time of year where we had just experienced Pesach, and now we're building up for Shavuos. There was an excitement in the air. And now the Beit HaMikdash, which was the center of all of that, is taken out of the picture. So that doesn't just reduce this period of time to neutral. It makes this period of time feel depressing. Because we remember, we collectively, the Jewish people, remember what this should have been like at this time of year.
Why didn't you feel that way about Pesach when that thing was probably?
Well, on some level we do. There are actually numerous practices we do on the night of the Seder that are supposed to remind us of Avelos. So the egg, right, is, we typically have the egg at the Seder. Why? Because the egg is a sign of mourning. Right. But why should the Karban Chagiga be represented by an egg? I mean, if anything, you would just, you know, have a piece of meat there, right? So the very usage of an egg is to bring in this idea of mourning, which is, again, we don't want to overdo it, because after all, the time of Pesach still is a time of tremendous joy. But even with the joy of Pesach, there's a little bit of a feeling of sadness that we're not quite able to observe Pesach the way we really want to. You know, there's something missing. What's that? Right. But especially these times, you know, when, especially because the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is so dependent on the Beit HaMikdash, you know, so what ends up happening is that a period of time that, fundamentally speaking, is supposed to be tremendously joyous, it's that very joy which makes it such a sad time, because we're very conscious of what we're missing. Right? Right. And you know, the truth is, it comes together in terms of that, because every wedding is supposed to be, in theory, you know, building up, you know, Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, and you know, that's and we feel the absence of all of that, you know, which is why we introduce things like breaking the glass and things of that nature, you know, to really feel the absence which we have. Moshe Lamad David Adam, just to bring this home, you know, in a certain sense, you know, so there's a very striking passage in Sefer Ezra when it describes how the Jews who had been exiled into Babylonia came back after 70 years and they started rebuilding the second Beit HaMikdash. And the Pesuk in there described how when they dedicated the second Beit HaMikdash, the people reacted in different ways. Right, the younger people, says the Pesukim in Sefer Ezra, the younger people saw this new Beis HaMikdash and they were happy and smiling and shouting, and it says all the older people, nobody's old, just people are youth challenged, but some of the youth challenged people who came, you know, who remembered the first Beis HaMikdash started weeping and wailing. Because the second Beis HaMikdash, you know, as beautiful as it was not as beautiful as the first one. It was missing various different important things, like the Aron, you know, the Urim V'Thummim, etc. So they looked at this pale facsimile of the first Beis HaMikdash, and they burst out crying. And the Pasuk in Ezra says that there were actually more people crying and there were people cheering because there were so many of the old-timers who remembered it. You call this a Beis HaMikdash? I remember a Beis HaMikdash. You know, there were so many old-timers who were looking at this Beis HaMikdash and saying, nah, this is not the real thing, it's not the real deal, you know, this is just a pale facsimile of what we used to have. There were more of them than there were younger people, and the crying, you know, ultimately overpowered all of the cheering that was taking place. So that image, which is a very, very striking image, is I think very relevant when we talk about Sefirot HaOmer. Yeah, okay, so we're fulfilling this mitzvah that kind of reminds us of how happy a time this was when the Beit HaMikdash stood. But as we're fulfilling this mitzvah, we feel that sense of loss, because the very attempt to imitate that which was reminds us so acutely of, but it's not the real deal. It's not the actual Beis HaMikdash and the real Sefirot HaOmer that we had back in the day. The more joyous the old Sefirot HaOmer was, the sadder the contemporary Sefirot HaOmer is, because we feel so acutely the loss that should have been, you know, of what should have been at this time of year, what we're hoping we'll be able to recapture as the Hashem, but in the here and now, we feel the loss so acutely. I think all of this is really the background to understanding where the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva fit into the picture. Again, we started off by asking, you know, again, yes, it's a tremendous, tremendous tragedy that 24,000 Talmidim passed away. But doesn't it seem like we're overreacting to that loss? Okay, it was a long time ago. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible tragedy. But again, by way of contrast, we're mourning for 33 days on the loss of the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. We mourn for only 21 days during the summer to mark the loss of the Beit HaMikdash. So are you telling me that the loss of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva is a worse calamity for Klal Yisrael than the loss of the Beit HaMikdash itself? It seems very hard, you know, to say something like that. I think we can understand the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva as being an extension of the fact that the Sefirot HaOmer is already a sad period because of the fact that the Beit HaMikdash is no longer here. And let's explain a little bit, right? There's a line which we say in our davening during Slichos, and in particular on the Ilah on Yom Kippur, where we say that after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, Ein lanu shiur rak hatzorah hazel. Now that the Beit HaMikdash is gone, the only thing that we really have, the only remnant that we really have of our intense relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the Torah itself. Right?
Yes.
Let's build on that a little bit, right? So, you know, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, the only intense connection we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without a Beis HaMikdash is through Torah, right? Chazal say in the Gemara and Brachos, Yom Shecharav HaBeis HaMikdash, from the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Ein lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olamo eladawet amos shel halacha bilvav. The only thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in this world, in other words, where His presence is really manifest, so we can really feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the four amos of halacha. In other words, the Torah, which is studied intensely and carried out, that's where we can feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, now that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore. Rabbi Akiva was the Gadol HaDor, and the 24,000 Talmidim that he was training were going to be the next Gedolei HaDor, and they, Rabbi Akiva was an individual who himself lived through the Chorban HaBayis. He lived through the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He saw all of that, and these 24,000 Talmidim were going to be the ones who would carry forth the banner of Torah after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. They were going to keep the world going. They were going to preserve, not that the Beis HaMikdash itself was gone, but they were going to preserve whatever they could from that sense of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we can't do it through the Beis HaMikdash, at least let's do it through Torah to keep that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu alive. What happened? They all died. And in the words of the Gemara in Yevamos that describes their deaths, the Haya Ha'olam Shomim, the world was desolate. That's the terminology which the Gemara in Yevamos uses to describe their deaths. What do you mean that the world was desolate? I mean, again, it's a tremendous loss, but it's not like there was nobody left after the 24,000 Talmidim. There were still people in the world. Right, so Rashi over there in the Gemara in Yevamos explains the world was bereft, at least for a short period of time, of really high-level Torah learning. Again, it obviously doesn't mean entirely. I mean, Rabbi Akiva himself was still alive. But there was a sense that we don't, you know, we lost the Beis HaMikdash, and we had one thing that was still with us to preserve the Beis HaMikdash, that was the Torah. And now, Rachmana Litzlan, the feeling was, now we lost even the Torah. And we don't have anything left after the Churban HaBayis. And that was devastating to people. And then the Gemara Yevamos says that, you know, it was only afterwards that Rabbi Akiva was able to gather together five great Talmidim and to start over again with them, that it kind of restored things at least a little bit to some degree of equilibrium. Okay, you know, so again, there's no replacing the loss of those 24,000 Talmidim, but at least on some level we kind of retrieved the Torah, you know, so that the loss of the Beis HaMikdash is not compounded by the loss of Torah itself. I would suggest that that's really, really, really what's behind all of the avelos that we carry forward, that we observe during this period of time on the Jewish calendar. We ask, how can it be that we only mourn for 21 days for the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, but we're mourning for 33 days for the loss of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? I think the answer is because the loss of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva is much more than just the personal tragedy of these 24,000 people. It's expressing the hashkafa, the point of view, that as long as we have Torah, we still have some little piece of the Beis HaMikdash left with us. The minute we lose Torah, we have nothing. For a brief period of time, the feeling was, not only is the Beis HaMikdash going to be lost, but the Torah itself is going to be lost. And that underscores all of the feeling of loss that we have during this period of time. Again, as the Baal HaMor pointed out, the whole period of Sfiras HaOmer gives us, it's a sad time, even before the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva passed away. The period of Sfiras HaOmer is a sad time by virtue of the fact that as we count, we realize that we're so lacking the Beis HaMikdash, that we don't have the most fundamental aspect of what the mitzvah of Sefiras HaOmer is all about. And then, davka, during this period of time, not only do we feel the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, but we feel the loss of Torah, which is the continuation of the Beis HaMikdash. That's devastating. That we have nothing. We feel like we have nothing left, right? And you know, it's that creates that incredible sense of avelos that we feel during this period of time.
So he's 24,000 tons in work all the time, right?
Yeah, those were his.
Does that mean that the teaching about the Akiva
wasn't? It's interesting, right? So was there a flaw in the teaching of Rabbi Akiva? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, it's interesting, you know, the Talmud. Right. I mean, again, so Chazal tell us that Talmudim passed away Shlonah who covered Zebul Zeb, that they didn't, they didn't treat one another properly, which again, we have to, you know, we don't know exactly what that means, right? But we do know that it's Rabbi Akiva who famously teaches that the Klal Gadol b'Torah is Yehav to the Reach HaKamocha, that you have to have. So again, it's not clear at what point during Rabbi Akiva's career he introduces that idea. You know, maybe this was a reaction to the death of the Talmidim. You know, it's hard to know. I mean, I don't think we know what was said at what particular time. But it's interesting to speculate, but I think all we can do is speculate. It's interesting to speculate whether there was a fundamental difference that Rabbi Akiva, you know, exhibited or took, you know, a different approach that he took with the 5 as opposed to the 24,000. It's hard to know. It's hard to know. But I mean, one thing we do know, again, you know, just as per that Gemara and Rashi, is that the loss of the Talmidim was considered so significant, not just because of the personal tragedy, but because of the sense that the Torah itself, that's it. You know, if Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim all die, so then, you know, again, to put it in modern terms, it's somewhat equivalent to the feelings that many had after the Holocaust. Besides all of the other tragedies of the Holocaust, the sense that the great yeshivos, to a very great extent, you know, were decimated. So what's going to be with Torah in the next generation? Baruch Hashem, I mean, here we are 70 plus years later, and, you know, we feel a lot better about that question than we did 75 years ago, but it's undeniable that that was certainly a question that a lot of people had at that particular time. What's going to be with Torah itself besides just the Talmidim? Okay, so just to sum up and to put this in context, you know, it's easy very often to get caught up in just the minutia of, you know, okay, we can't plan a wedding during this period of time, you know, exactly when can you take a haircut and things of that nature. What I wanted to try to present today is really just to look at the broader picture, that all of these minhagei avelos, all of these customs of mourning that we're observing during this period of time, are really expressions of A, yearning for the Beis HaMikdash, right? And B, a recognition of the idea that the only thing that we can carry forward during this period of time, you know, the only thing that we have to carry forward the memory of the Beis HaMikdash at this period of time is really the Torah itself. And, you know, to the extent to which we're holding on to Torah, we're also holding on in a very, very palpable way to that connection to the Beis HaMikdash and keeping it alive. You know, I'm not taking haircuts during this period of time as an expression of a bad idea of this commitment to Torah as being that which is still keeping the Mikdash itself alive on some level still within us.